Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists about baseball books, music, film, pretty much anything you can fit on a bookshelf. And that's the slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. One of my favorite movie quotes comes from Men in Black, when Agent K is trying to recruit police officer Edwards. 1,500 years ago, everybody knew the Earth was the center of the universe. 500 years ago, everybody knew the Earth was flat. And 15 minutes ago, you knew that humans were alone on this planet. Imagine what you'll know tomorrow. I'm always reminded of this when I speak to a veteran writer like Hal Bodley, author of the new book, How Baseball Explains America. Bodley began covering the game in 1958. He has seen baseball transition from an era when the majors consisted of 18 teams, when there was no interleague play except for the World Series, which was also the only postseason baseball, and when it wasn't unusual for writers to travel with and have their room and board picked up by the ball clubs they covered. If Bodley was still a member with the Baseball Writers Association of America, his ID card would be in the single digits, indicative of his length of service. As an employee of MLB.com, he had to resign from the organization. So you wonder if some 56 years later, he might have had any concept of how the profession would have changed. 24-hour sports cable coverage, blogs and the internet, the diminution of the impact and influence of print journalism, just to name a few. Bodley, who is a columnist for USA Today since it launched in 1982, has managed to roll with it nicely. Here's our conversation.
Hal Bodley, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
It's always my pleasure.
Now, you've been writing about baseball for more than half a century. Why this book now?
Well, you know, there's a lot of books in baseball, as you well know, and you talk about them repeatedly. There are biographies, and there are tell-all stories and that type of thing. But over the years, I've had such a great passion for baseball on the field, how great a game it is. And I got to thinking about how it would tie in with our society over the years, how much a part of America it is. I tried to explain how important and basically how essential it is to understanding the American experience. And, of course, there's the love affair that baseball has with the men and the women who make it all possible.
Now, baseball is often cited as a metaphor for life. In your new book, How Baseball Explains America, narrows that down to life in America. Was this relatively easy to do, or was it a stretch, at least in part, to make your premises fit?
Well, as you say, it took over half a century to put it together, but the experiences and everything, were put together over the years, and a lot of the anecdotes, a lot of the memories that I've had, I was able to tie them in with the chapters that I wrote. And what I tried to do, Ron, was basically have each chapter as more or less an essay on that particular subject. I didn't necessarily set out to tie everything in together, but go from step to step and a lot of the different aspects of baseball in America, and that's what I really tried to do.
Now, you've witnessed so many changes in the game and in the nation over all these years. What stands out for you most?
Well, I think the biggest thing that stands out is the great changes that the Commissioner of Baseball, Bud Selig, has made. I mean, the game has changed enormously since even 1990, but now we have instant replay. We have the various divisions. We have all the different things, revenue sharing among the owners, which has created a lot of parity in baseball. All of those types of things I tied into it, and I think that has to be a big part of it. The sabermetrics. I mean, how involved are we with sabermetrics? I mean, the managers now don't really call all the shots. A lot of them are called for them by some computer person who decides where to position the outfielders against certain hitters and that type of thing.
Now, you got your start at the tail end of an era in which writers still traveled and even socialized to a degree with the players. How has your relationship with the players changed?
Well, I think it's a we-they situation now, Ron, more than it was then, sadly. And I'm not so sure from a journalistic standpoint this is good. The credibility obviously wasn't as good. But, you know, we were part of the team then. I mean, as you say, we traveled with the Bulk. When I first started covering baseball, we got meal money. We traveled on the charters with the Bulk players and that type of thing. And a lot of the things that we saw happen, we turned our backs on. We didn't write and report them. And so I think, as you said, there's a credibility problem with that. It's changed now where everything is so scripted. I mean, I was thinking yesterday, for example, I was at the Tampa Bay Rays game with Joe Maddon. The Rays have had a lot of problems with pitchers throwing 0-2 pitches that have become very, very bad for the team. I mean, big hits, that type of thing. And I said to him, I said, you know, when I started covering baseball, Joe, I sat down with Gene Mock and we talked about 0-2 pitches. But you don't have that opportunity now to sit there and discuss the philosophy of something like that with a manager like we did in the old days. You'd go into the office in the middle of the afternoon, you'd sit around for an hour or two, and you'd learn an awful lot about baseball. I think that's what really taught me the game, that type of thing. And now you just can't do that because it's a mass interview with the managers at a certain time every day. It's a mass interview after the games with the managers. And you just don't have that relationship that we used to have in the old days.
Is it a sense that the teams needed the writers more than they do now?
I think that's true. I mean, the media these days, I mean, there is so much media with the internet and the websites and the blogs and that type of thing and all of the cable networks. I mean, when I started covering baseball, there were like three or four writers covering the team, and the TV people never went on the road with them. I mean, you just didn't have that. The extent of the TV was the play-by-play broadcast and also the 5 or 10 minute segment on the weekly or the hourly news shows in the afternoon in the city. So, yeah, it's really changed an awful lot. I mean, you don't have the access you used to have in those days. And obviously, I think everybody on the player side is more guarded than they've ever been because of this great influx of media.
Now, speaking of the media, what about the relationship between writers of your generation and the current writers, the ones who are just coming up now?
Well, they're young and they're talented now, maybe even more talented than we were in the old days. But, you know, I as I watch them in the press box, I'm somewhat amazed. You know, we watched the game in the old days, watched every play, every pitch, and now they're on their computers and they're doing Facebook and Twitter. And I just question whether or not they have the passion for baseball on the field that we had when I started covering in the 1950s. It's a love affair with baseball that I had, and I still have it. And that's what I tried to describe in this book, How Baseball Explains America, the relationship with America, and how important it is, the fathers, the sons. It goes on and on and on. But you know, the other point is that the beat writers now for baseball, they don't stay on the beat very long. In my beginning, the baseball beat was the best beat on the paper. That's what everybody wanted to do, and you stayed on it forever. But now they stay on it a couple of years, and they're burned out, and they move on to something else.
I'm just curious, what's your Baseball Writers Association number?
I don't have one right now. I got down into single digits, and because I work for MLB.com now, we're not allowed to be members of the Baseball Writers.
I see. Because just
at USA Today, I was down, I think, 10 or 9 or something like that when I finally was told that I'm tainted and can't belong.
And just to explain to the listeners, the lower your number, or maybe it's the higher your number, the longer you've been on the job.
That's right.
So once you get down to single digits, you've been on for a very long time.
Yeah, you really do, and you better get a walker or a wheelchair or something by then, too.
now, again, you started in the late 50s. There was an attitude shift in the 70s when younger writers like Maury Allen and Stan Isaacs and Phil Pepe came on board, and the more established writers from the 40s and 50s looked upon them as instigators, and that was a paradigm shift in how the games were covered. Do you find that now? Because now you have not only the writers, but you have bloggers who weren't even on the radar, I'm sure, in the personal computer days, and all the things that you now are called upon to do that you never thought you would be doing when you first started.
You're positively correct. Talking a little bit about the evolution, when I first started covering the game, we seldom did a lot of investigative reporting, so to speak. You know, we didn't do much not too much with the quotes. It was more about the play-by-play of the game because you didn't have that the readers didn't have that access that they have now. And now they have it, of course, and to go play-by-play in a newspaper or a website story is just not necessary. But, yeah, I think it has changed. I think that as it has evolved, it's much, much different. I think that the intensity of the media is greater. But the one thing that troubles me most of all, Ron, is the fact that when I started out, and I was very, very involved with the beginning of the Associated Press Sports Editors Association, and there was all sorts of ethical type of things that we introduced. But now there's so much out there, and it's a matter of getting it out there first, whether it's accurate or not. We didn't do that. We made sure we had our stories sourced. We made sure we had them concrete before we reported them. And I'm not so sure that that's obviously, it's not the way it is today because there's so much media, and it's a matter of getting it out there as quickly as possible.
But I don't think it's the technology in itself that's evil, but the way it's used. Have you embraced, you mentioned sabermetrics before, what do you think of that? Have you embraced that to any degree?
In the beginning, being the kind of guy I am, being a purist, I did not. But I do now. I think it has a place in game. I think it in the game. I think it in talking to some of the older managers, and they agree with me. I think it definitely has a place. It shouldn't dominate the game. It shouldn't dominate the way the game is played or the way the game is reported. But I believe it adds an awful lot to the game, and it's kind of a marriage between that and the common sense in baseball. Don't forget, these players have hearts and souls and talents and that type of thing, and that doesn't show up in a computer readout.
There's a chapter in How Baseball Explains America dedicated to presidents, and there's a page with photos of you and the two Bushes and Bill Clinton. What did you talk to them about when you sat down with them?
Good question. I was invited in 1992 by President George H.W. Bush to go to the All-Star Game in San Diego aboard Air Force One. He was a fond reader of USA Today, and he invited me to go with him. And on the way to the All-Star game, we sat in the conference room aboard Air Force One, and he had a paper in front of him, and he talked about the players who were chosen to be in the All-Star game. And he said, what do you think about this guy? Do you think that guy, and how can that guy be chosen? And that type of a conversation that we had. And then at the end of the conversation, he said, you know, my wife and I are really down on our son, George W., because he just fired Bobby Valentine, and we really loved Bobby Valentine. Another time, I was very fortunate in 1997 when Bill Clinton was at Shea Stadium to take part in the ceremony, the 50th anniversary ceremony of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier. And I was able to have a one-on-one interview with the president at that time. And I said to him, I said, you know, presidents always call champions and they honor championship teams and that type of thing. I said, if you had been president back in 1947 when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier and you made the phone call, what would you have said? And he said, well, I wouldn't have talked about baseball. Mm. And I said, you wouldn't? He said, no, not at all. He said, I would have talked about basically what this did for our society, the far-reaching effect that it's going to have on a lot of people in America, and it's going to, you know, evolve for years to come. And I thought that was really a good quote.
Now, I've always thought that regardless of one's politics, the moment where President Bush threw out the first pitch of the World Series in New York in 2001 was one of those moments that just unites everybody.
You know, he helped us heal. I mean, no question about it. I think a lot of people were worried about how he would be received, but there was no question. That brought goosebumps to me, really, when he went out there, and he said the same thing. I've talked to him about it over the years, and he said it was just, you know, a shining moment, so to speak, for America, and that's exactly what it was, and the president took part of it. Another time, Ron, that I think that is significant, and I wrote about this, in 1994, of course, baseball was on strike. The 1994 World Series was canceled by Bud Selig. And Bill Clinton summoned everybody to the White House in February of 1995 to try to end the strike. And here players were milling around the Roosevelt Room and the Oval Office, and the president with his shirt sleeve rolled up was coming out trying to get these two polarized sides back on the field again. And the president, you know, was very, very important in that. And hey, another time, Ron, How about the green letter that Roosevelt wrote during World War II? Mm-hmm. And we shall continue baseball. I think that was enormously important, not only for those people that stayed back in this country while others went to war, but also for those at war. Bob Feller told me one time when he was aboard a ship during World War II, he did everything he could getting on the radio to try to find out the scores of games and how baseball was going in the U.S.
Well, that was that connection that, you have to back home in those days.
Positively, yes, no question.
Now, when you were younger, when did you decide that this was the life you wanted to live?
It kind of happened by accident. I was destined to become an attorney, and I loved baseball. My father took me to Yankee Stadium, believe it or not, in 1950 to watch the Phillies and the Yankees play in the World Series, and he put his arm around me. Joe DiMaggio came up to the plate. We had really good seats behind the dugout, and he said, I want you to remember this moment because years from now you're going to be remembering Joe DiMaggio. And years later I got to know Joe DiMaggio, and I told him about that experience. And when they had the final ceremony at the old Yankee Stadium, I talked about how sad I was to see this great ballpark be replaced by a state-of-the-art place next door. So, yeah, it just was something that kind of evolved. I wrote sports in college and did some radio and TV work in college, and it was more important to me than trying to become a lawyer. So I just sort of evolved into it, and that's the way it happened. And I just feel I've been blessed to be able to do this.
Now, you were in on the ground floor when USA Today began publishing in 1982, and now you're writing for MLB.com. What are some of the biggest differences in your job now?
I think the biggest difference now is the fact that it's so immediate. You know, you always had a cycle in the newspaper business. I mean, you could, you know, you just couldn't break the news. I mean, that was what the Associated Press and the United Press International did. But now, the way we do it, it's so immediate. No matter what we do, we can do it right away. I mean, the other night when Don Zimmer passed away last week, I was at dinner in New York, and you know, immediately we were able to do a column and get it out on the website. And I think that's the biggest thing. And plus, I think all the you know, the large number of people in the media today.
As a veteran in the industry, how do you find the pace? Is it something that energizes you, or do you find it very taxing?
Well, I'm getting along in years, and as you said early on, I've been doing it for so long. There's nothing that energizes me more than working on a breaking story, or even going to a game where there's a really good storyline, or talking to somebody involved in a game who's a very interesting personality, and you try to get into him a little bit and do a profile. I that just keeps me going. I mean, I cannot see myself looking for a very comfortable rocking chair off in the corner of the room.
And finally, what advice would you give young writers who are looking to break into the business?
I think two things. I think, first of all, no matter what their ambition is, whether it's in the electronic field, whether it's writing, learn how to write. Learn the English language. Learn how to get a great vocabulary. And then I think learn the game that you're going to cover and know what the game is all about and realize it's probably not as easy to play this game as it looks from the press box.
And we've been talking with Hal Bodley, author of the new book, How Baseball Explains America, published by Triumph. Hal, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Always my pleasure. Enjoy.
And that was our conversation with Hal Bodley. Thanks for listening. Tune in again soon for another fascinating personality from the world of baseball, books, music, literature, what have you. And remember to visit the website, Ron Kaplan's baseballbookshelf.com, and sign up for the contest. You send in a comment and you may win a free book. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.
Said, boys, I'm glad I discovered this land. Gee, it's a wonder.